To call the June 4th, 2019 post council to order, I'd like to excuse Frank Budd and John Crowley. We also need an approval of March 19th, 2019 minutes. Do I have a motion for approval?
So moved that we approve the minutes, Mr. Chairman.
I have a motion from Spence Austin. Do I have a second?
Second.
A second by Mike Haddon. Any discussion? Seeing none, do we have a vote? Those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, we'll move forward. Quarterly reports, Lieutenant Jacqueline Moore and Lieutenant Alex Garcia.
Hello. So these are the investigation reports for the quarter of March 1st to May 31st, 2019. We received 38 complaints. Of those, we opened 33 cases. We held one administrative law judge hearing. We closed four cases with no action following an investigation, and we received six voluntary relinquishments. The allegations related to those, one was rape, another was sexual conduct on duty, another was custodial sexual misconduct, another was unlawful sexual conduct, another was BCI violation, and the last was unlawful sexual misconduct and unlawful use of controlled substance. We reviewed 177 basic training applicant backgrounds, 31 dispatcher applicant backgrounds, and 28 waiver reactivation applicant backgrounds. We currently have 79 open cases, and 69 of those are active. Any questions?
Good morning. This is the same time frame, March 1st to May 31st, 2019. We had 340 LEO, which started with 33. We had 29 that completed LEO and were certified. We had four that were departed. One was dismissed for medical. He had an injury during the academy. One was an agency decision where the agency canceled the enrollment. Cadet decision, and then we also had one that failed EVO. 341 SFO started with 38, 35 completed SFO training, three were departed, one canceled enrollment based off of the cadet decision, and two were academic dismissals based off of not passing the SFO certification exam. 341 LEO started with 38, 37 completed the process and were certified. One was departed, and that was for a physical skill, physical fitness. They couldn't pass the LEO entrance PT. 342 SFO started with 27, 26 that are still enrolled in SFO. 26 are in SFO. 26 graduated. One was departed, and the one that was departed canceled enrollment based off of an investigations case that was opened on that individual. 342 LEO, they started with 40, 38 were certified. One was departed for another investigations case that was opened, and one of them failed EVO. 343 SFO, they started with 29, 27 of them completed SFO. Two did not complete the process because they're still missing parts of the certification. They haven't taken either a physical skill or a certification exam that's still pending. We do have 343 LEO that just started up this week. So there are 40 in that LEO block currently right now. Our upcoming classes, we have 344, which is slated to start June 17th. And conclude September 26th. Currently, there are 50 cadets enrolled in that class, which is going to cause us to split for the physical skills because of that high number and us making accommodations for that. 345 slated to start August 12th and conclude November 21st, and we currently have 35 enrolled in that class. 346, which will be our final class of the year, unless needs need to be met. That starts September 9th and will conclude December 19th. And currently we have four cadets enrolled in that academy class. Any questions as far as the academy classes go? As far as our in-service training goes, we are in the process of trying to get in-service back up and running now. From March 1st to May 31st, we offered 34 in-service training classes, which 754 officers attended. Total of 841 were originally enrolled. We also trained 26 dispatchers for a total hours of 475 hours of training provided. We ran one dispatcher course, a defensive tactics phase one, defensive tactics recert for instructor, three basic EVO courses, numerous intoxilizer and radar classes, SFST refresher, and also instructor development, which we kind of hit hard this quarter because of the demand. We've kind of changed our instructor development class a little bit, and this last go round, we moved it to the auditorium, which was able to accommodate more individuals. So that's kind of big for us because a total of 156 officers received instructor development training over in this quarter. So, any questions as far as in-service goes? We move on to the satellite audits. So this quarter, I performed satellite audit on Weber State, and we had Bridgerland scheduled. But Rod Peterson with Logan runs Bridgerland, and he was tied up with that homicide investigation. So I'll catch Bridgerland next quarter. There were no exceptions on the Weber State audit. Everything seems to be going smoothly up there. Jack has made some accommodations up at Weber to accommodate Davis County and Weber County Sheriff's Office, where he's accepting their cadets. I don't know what their agreement is up there, but he's done that in part because their numbers are down, and to make it cost effective for their academy to continue running, it's a benefit to them and a benefit to Davis and Weber County as well. So, but they're not, this next go round on their class, he says they're struggling to get people through. So he said he may even have to cancel his night class this next go round. So. Any questions as far as the audit? Thank you.
Thanks, Lieutenant. We'll now move to open meetings training with our legal counsel, Marcus Yockey.
This will be brief. This is required under law, under 52-4-104. The presiding officer of the public body shall ensure annual training of the Open and Public Meetings Act. So this is required for each and every public body. This is a public body, the Post Council is. All meetings that we have are open to the public. That's why we always have the media here, we appreciate them here. Any other persons may also be present. So post administration actually deals with a lot of the requirements under the Open Meetings Act. We usually have Chris here, but it's recorded. We post the minutes online, and post actually does a lot better than the majority of the other boards and councils that I sit on. They actually have everything in audio form, and then they have on the agenda. You can click on each and every agenda item and listen to the audio for the minutes instead of reviewing written minutes, which helps out a ton. For an open meeting, we're required to post notice 24 hours in advance, and that's also done by Julie. She does an amazing job, and we appreciate that, posting the notice not only downstairs but also on the website, the Utah Public Notice website. The things that you guys need to be aware of are just two quick topics. First, we have emergency meetings. We've had one emergency meeting since I've been with Post Council. With the emergency meetings, an emergency meeting can be held if the majority of the body votes to consider a matter of an emergency or urgent matter. In this case, we were required to review two or three matters that we had to look at again. But the body must provide the best notice practicable, and which includes the time and place of the emergency meeting, the topics to be considered, The emergency meeting of the public body may not be held unless an attempt has been made to notify all members of the public body and the majority of the members approve the meeting. So that's just for your guys' to throw it out there to remind you guys that we have the opportunity, we can have an emergency meeting, but we need to do our best just to adhere to the normal meeting process. The other item that needs to be discussed is something that does happen every once in a while with this body. It's the closed meeting portion, and the reason this is so important is because there is a criminal penalty attached to it. A member of a public body who knowingly or intentionally violates the law or who knowingly or intentionally abates or advises a violation of any of the closed meeting provisions is guilty of a Class B misdemeanor. So in regards to a closed meeting, we can only go into a closed meeting for certain purposes, and in this body, it's generally only for one purpose, to discuss a character, professional competence, or physical, mental health of an individual. In order to go into closed session, we do need to have two-thirds of the body vote to close the meeting. The public body must hold an open meeting with a public notice before closing the meeting. So that's what we do. Generally, all our closed sessions are done on the officer's character or professional or mental health. I believe we did one two or three times ago. When we're discussing physical or mental health, it's not recorded. This is the one exception. Generally, a closed meeting has to be recorded, but when we're talking about an individual, it does not is not recorded, but the chairman or co-chairman needs to sign an affidavit indicating that that's all we're talking about. The votes to close and the reason, so when we go into a closed session, we have to have a vote to close and the reason for closing it, and that must be recorded in the minutes. And then when we're in a closed session, the body cannot approve or vote on anything. We cannot take final action. We cannot interview anybody. We can't do anything. It's just more of a discussion. And then after we have that discussion, it needs to come into the open body via vote, and then we have the final action taken there after. Like I said, very quick, we're just satisfying the statute under the Open and Public Meetings Act. I think this body does pretty good about that. Any questions or concerns? Thank you.
Thanks, Mr. Yockey. We'll now move to 2019-20 curriculum update, basic corrections officer training. We'll have Director Travis Knorr now.
Good morning. We have one change to our basic correctional officer course this year. In accordance with House Bill 318, there were changes made to the BCO curriculum about transportation of prisoners. It goes into transporting female inmates in each trimester of their labor. This includes the least restrictive restraints necessary when transporting them. It also goes into they are not to be shackled or restraints used during childbirth, postpartum, while in a medical facility, unless there's an immediate threat to harm themselves or medical staff or correctional staff or the public. If that does happen, it's required a written report of why the restraints were used. That's the only change we have. Any questions? All right, thank you.
We'll now hear from Lieutenant Alex Garcia, Special Functions Officer.
As far as the basic training curriculum for SFO goes, there weren't any major changes. The only thing that was added and has already been added because of the law change with medical marijuana was just the statute and the basic guidelines as to what is allowed, what isn't allowed. And that was those changes were made to the law block of classes. Any questions as far as that goes? With that and the CBD oil, I think the director may get into this a little bit later, but the Department of Agriculture is starting a list or a database of approved products that are approved by the state of Utah. POST has taken the stance that if it is not on that list of the Department of Agriculture, then it is not an allowable substance or CBD oil. Any questions?
Stevenson had a few things to...
Just to build upon the CBD oil issue, we've had a lot of inquiries about what is legal and what isn't. If it's not on a list, we will still consider that an unapproved ingredient to whatever somebody wants to use it for. However, if it's not on the approved list, because I guess that is updated several times a week, it is incumbent upon the person who used it to have it tested to see if it meets the statutory requirements of being under 0.3% THC level. So they will have the burden of making sure that that is the case. And then even if it's not on the list but it fits within that criteria, we would not require them to have a two-year wait to enter the academy.
I believe to sell that in the state of Utah, the store actually has to have a certificate that states it's under the 0.03%.
You're correct. We met with the Department of Agriculture during the special event process in Park City, and they said that they do have to have a certificate in order to meet the requirements.
Will that suffice, or is still required a test?
Well, where are they getting the card saying that it complies with Department of Agriculture?
They have
from the Department of Agriculture?
I'm not sure which.
That's my understanding, that they actually check.
Yeah, so if it's from them, then it's going to be on their list. If it's not, then it's... Yeah. So, any other questions? And I'm sure this is going to change as we go because the law is not very clear. So we're left with this sandwich that we have to eat. Regarding the, remember we typically have this meeting to deliver the new curriculum. I would like, with the council's permission, to deviate from that tradition, because curriculum should be changing as trends change and as law changes, and it just is not. It's not real time if we wait every year just to get the approval. What I would like and what I propose is that every quarter we will propose changes to the curriculum as needed. Right now I'm in the process of trying to get a curriculum coordinator or developer. So we'll have somebody that will be their full-time job just working on curriculum. It's getting to the point where things are changing at such a rapid pace that my staff does not have the time to keep up. So that is in the works. Hopefully by the next council meeting, we will have a person filling that position, and then these changes will come up every quarter. I don't know if that needs to be voted on. There is no statutory requirement. It's just been a tradition that has been annually approved, but it is a requirement that we present it to you for approval. So are you guys good with that? We'll proceed.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
I guess silence gives permission.
That's right.
We'll now move toward disciplinary cases. Linda Vitti, if you'd like to present.
Good morning, members of the council. This morning we have 8 cases. The first case is Wesley Andresen.
Are you Officer Andresen? Are you Officer Andresen?
Yes, I am.
Do you have an attorney? Are you here with an attorney? Okay, that's fine. Yeah. Officer Andresen, the substantiated charge in that case, the substantiated allegation in that case is taking of protected wildlife illegal except as authorized.
The range for this Category E offense is a letter of caution to 1.5 year suspension. The guidelines call for baseline is a 6-month suspension, and POST is recommending a letter of caution. Officer Andresen has had 15 years of service with the Utah Department of Corrections. He paid a fine in this case over the phone. There are no aggravators, and the mitigators in this case are that he promptly reported the violation to DWR and his agency when he realized he was out of his boundary. He helped clean and pack out the animal for DWR. Also, I have a letter from Greg. I don't know how to pronounce his last name. P-E-A-Y?
Pay.
Pay? Greg Pay. Do we want that read into the record? Yes? Okay. Dear Post Council members, on the morning of September 19, 2018, I received a telephone call from Wesley Andresen, an employee at the Gunnison facility. The purpose of his call was to inform me that he had been involved in an incident where he shot a bull elk that was later identified to be within the boundaries of SMU. He recounted the incident with specific details and readily acknowledged his mistake. In turn, I conveyed the same information to UDC Executive Director Mike Haddon and the department's Law Enforcement Bureau. All the information reported by Wes was also thoroughly documented by the DNR conservation officer on the day. No discrepancy exists between Wes's verbal report to me and the written report by DNR. Therefore, I wish to express my confidence that Wesley Andresen has acted with integrity. He did not hesitate to contact the appropriate authorities, acknowledge his error, and accept potential penalties. In addition, Wes has proven himself easy to work with, a hard worker, and a good communicator. Wes was promoted to a supervisory position over the boiler shop. Here he has proven an effective leader by acting with integrity to his family and coworkers alike. And it's signed by Greg. Hey, sorry. Okay. The facts are, on September 18th, 2018, Wesley Andresen was investigated for shooting an elk on a cooperative wildlife management unit. Andresen was hunting elk in a limited area for which he had a valid hunting permit. Andresen saw a bull elk and shot the animal. Andresen did not observe any signs on the fenced property before he shot the animal. After he shot the elk, Andresen observed a sign on the gate that stated the property was a SCWMU. Andresen knew at that moment that he was not within his limited area boundary and therefore committed a violation. He immediately contacted DWR and had them respond to the location. The DWR officer conducted an investigation and cited Andresen for big game wildlife rule violation, which is a non-criminal infraction. Andresen paid a $180 fine over the phone, reported the conduct to his agency. During a Garrity interview with Post and one with his department, Andresen admitted he shot the elk on the CWMU property, which was not covered by his limited entry permit. He said he realized there was an issue with the location of the elk after he saw the CWMU sign posted on the gate. He reported his mistake to the DWR immediately. He was given a letter of reprimand by his department for policy violations and retained his employment, and he waived his right to a hearing. Any questions, or would you like to address the council, sir?
Yeah. My name is Wesley Andresen. I take complete responsibility for what I did. I don't know what more I can say. The facts that they've read up here are true. I was on a hunt. 3 days into the hunt, I've been riding my horses all day with my boys, hunting. That evening as we went up to get our trailer where we had taken our horses to, on that way there was an elk. I had been hunting in this area for many, many years. I thought I knew the boundaries. It was right next to I-70 down where we live. I honestly had no idea that that boundary was right there. It was with 180 to 150 feet of where my boundary was. I did commit the crime, the infraction. I reported it. I did everything I thought I was supposed to. I apologize for this and for having to come before the post council. I don't know what more to say, but I do take responsibility for what I've done. So thank you. Thank you for your time.
Any questions for Mr. Andresen?
Director Haddon?
I need to recuse myself on this case.
Show that Director Haddon has to recuse himself.
I do have a question for legal counsel.
Yes, sir. Sheriff Noel.
It was a non-criminal infraction. He did not need to report the rule violation to anyone. If this is a non-criminal infraction, why are we here today with him?
If it's action that the statute says, actions that if you engage in conduct that would constitute a violation of a state or federal, whether or not he actually violated a criminal statute is not the issue in this. It's whether or not he engaged in conduct which would have constituted a violation of state or federal. So frequently we have cases that are not actually charged as criminal cases. It doesn't need to be a criminal case. Just whether that conduct or engagement.
After I reported this to the DNR, he told me it was a boundary violation, and he said, you know, it was just, I'm trying to remember what he called it, I apologize, anyway, an infraction, but knowing that where I work, who I work for, what we stand for, I felt like I needed to report it to Greg Pay, which I did, and from there we've just kind of went through our departmental council and then through post, and so that's how I what I was told. I know that they obviously have to investigate it further, which that's why I wanted to be up front and honest about it all and the whole time.
Any further questions?
Post's recommendation in this case is a letter of caution.
We have a motion to accept from Chief Alan Swanson. Do we have a second?
Second.
Second from Chief Chad Self. Any discussion? Seeing none, we'll call for the vote. Those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, it passes. Thank you.
Okay, the next case is Luis Argueta, and I believe Mr. Jensen is here with his client. Mr. Jensen would like to make a request of counsel, so I'm going to let him make that request before I address counsel. Go ahead, JC.
Thank you. My appreciation to counsel for allowing me to do this. Good morning, counsel. My request is that this matter be pushed off to be heard until the December 2019 council. My request is based upon the following. Over the last 3 years, when I've been to these meetings, I've noticed a great deal of benefit, not only to the council, to the body here, but also to the law enforcement officers before it, for the council to be able to make inquiries of that officer and for that officer to be able to answer those. I feel that gives great insight to the council, and I've seen it make a difference before. We're here today because of an incident that occurred last June. A jury trial was had in January of this year where my client was found guilty. That has since been appealed. We do have a subsequent jury trial in the district court scheduled for September 25th of this year. Based upon the fact that that jury trial is scheduled, I've advised my client, and he's taken my advice, to not address the council. Again, I would like him to do so, but I can't have him do that until after this jury trial is concluded. So my request, again, is to the council push this matter off until the December council.
Thank you, Mr. Jensen. Do we have a motion from the council to allow this to continue, or discussion?
Right.
Sheriff Paulson.
Showing that he's retired, so he's not currently functioning as a certified police officer.
That is correct.
I'd make a motion to push it to December.
So actually, if I can address the council really quick. So in regards to the rule, so rule provides that the respondent signs a hearing waiver. So anytime the respondent signs a hearing waiver, enters into default, or an ALJ has issued an opinion, the rule under Utah Administrative Rule 72849 provides that Post shall bring the matter before the next regular scheduled hearing. So in this case, that's why Post is obligated to bring it before the council. So in regards to this, there would have to be a motion to table, but in regards to normal rules of tabling, you can only table it for one hearing, one matter, the subsequent meeting. So that would be our fall, September 1. So we'd be going outside of the general rules of the general norms of public bodies. But that I'm just, again, just advising you guys. So the general, when you table something, it's only general for the next scheduled meeting.
Then could we table it again, Mr. Yockey?
You generally do not have the opportunity to table it once again. So it's tabled once, and then it's heard before the next meeting.
So it's unprecedented to do it?
Correct.
Question, are you trying to get back into law enforcement?
What?
Considering that he already has a trial date for September, I would still make the motion.
I mean, with it being unprecedented and with the regulations being as such, are we putting the administrative proceedings on track for an appeal?
Potentially, yes. Yes. So you are putting the council in a bind by doing this. You are also setting precedent, potentially for any future proceedings. So not only are you putting yourselves at issue with a previous precedent, you're creating a new precedent.
And as counsel, as I understand it correctly, my guess would be that you'd like your client to be able to address the council to provide some mitigating information, perhaps.
Absolutely.
But that being said, he has signed the waiver acknowledging essentially that the facts contained in the notice of agency action, that he's not contesting those, right?
That's correct. And if I could speak on that, I don't know if the investigator based the notice on the verdict from the jury trial, or if that was going to be the decision from his investigation solely. Now, if it was based upon the decision from the jury verdict, and that verdict is essentially overturned at our next jury trial, then we're kind of left in a difficult position.
But he's already signed the waiver, and it could be feasible that even if he's acquitted on the appeal, we have a lesser standard during these processes.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Question, if we go ahead with this today and then there's a different outcome in the next trial, couldn't he then appeal our decision at that time?
It's 30 days.
It's 30 days. And another thing that complicates this is, so Post does their proceedings based on the conduct, not based on whether or not there was a violation of law or not. I mean, so it's based on, Post has its own independent investigation to determine whether or not the conduct has satisfied the state or federal violation. Whether or not somebody has been convicted or not, that's separate. It's similar to, I guess the easiest way to think about it is like a driver's license hearing. You have the administrative process on your driver's license, and then you have the criminal process through it, like a DUI through the criminal courts.
And generally, if I'm correct, Post has taken the position that they'll usually kick some of these off after the criminal, to wait for the criminal proceedings as to not interfere, create Garrity issues, potentially, right?
Correct.
Depending on the case.
Yes.
So if it's it's very rare, but we have waited before because of something within the case, we feel like, we don't know if we have enough, or we don't understand this part of what's going on criminally, so we wait. But 90% of the time, we move forward based upon the conduct itself, regardless of criminal outcome.
So we currently have a motion from Christy Warren. Do we have further discussion or a substitute motion or a second?
Just a question for counsel. So if we wait, if we table it till the next meeting, your client still wouldn't talk before the council, is that correct?
That would be a discussion I'd have to have with him, and I haven't addressed
that scenario. More than likely, my advice would remain resolute. Thank you.
I would counter that we go ahead and proceed as scheduled, since he's already signed the document, and to avoid potential conflict with the council.
So, Bruce Bailey, is that a substitute motion?
Yes, please.
So I have a substitute motion to go ahead and proceed. Do we have a second?
Second.
I have a second from Colonel Mike Rappage. Any further discussion?
Chair, I'll have to recuse myself from this.
Show for the record, Chief Chad Silf has recused himself. Any further discussion? Seeing none, we'll call for the vote. Those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Aye.
We have show that Christy Morin is opposed. Thank you.
Luis Argueta had been an officer with the Murray City Police Department for 23 years. He retired before the conclusion of the internal investigation. The substantiated allegation in this case is assault, which is a Category C offense. The guidelines baseline is a 2-year suspension. The range is 9 months to 3.5 years, and POST is recommending a 2-year suspension. There are no aggravators. There are no mitigators. In terms of a criminal case, he was found guilty by a jury on January 18, 2019, of a Class B misdemeanor assault. On June 13, 2018, Luis Argueta responded to an unconscious male subject at 4503 South State Street in Murray. Argueta located the unconscious male and performed a sternum rub technique on the individual. After the second sternum rub and a subsequent slap on the individual's cheek, the individual began to kick Argueta in the leg. Argueta stepped back and re-engaged the individual by saying, "Hey, asshole," as he delivered one closed fist strike to the individual's face. The individual was found to be 16 years old and was later allowed to leave the area. Argueta was subsequently convicted by a jury of assault. During the Department Garrity interview, Argueta admitted he struck the 16-year-old individual in the face and held him down because he was concerned for Argueta's safety. Argueta said he felt his use of force was justified to prevent him from being knocked into traffic. During a Garrity interview with Post, Argueta said the 16-year-old individual kicked him pretty hard in the lower part of the leg 3 or 4 times. Argueta said he had his back to a busy road and he was concerned he might be kicked into traffic. Argueta described the strike to the 16-year-old as a loose, closed fist tap to the skin. On January 18, 2019, he was found guilty by a jury of assault, which is a Class B misdemeanor. He waived his rights to a hearing in this case, and we are recommending a 2-year suspension. Any questions of Mr. Jensen or myself?
Seeing one, we'll go ahead and ask for a motion.
Counselor, if I could address.
Please, Mr. Jensen.
I appreciate the council entertaining my prior request. The limited information I can offer to the council is that this individual very clearly asserted that only after he struck Lou Argueta twice, who was identified as a law enforcement officer in his law enforcement uniform acting in that capacity, only after he was kicked twice towards a busy roadway did he strike this individual once in the face. I would like to draw the council to prior council hearings, and in all fairness, my notations begin on June 14th, 2018. I don't have anything more recent. First, what I looked at here were similar allegations, that being the assault charge and only that, and the recommendation by POST. The first one I'd like to draw your attention to is the September 21st, 2016 matter where Brian Barrowman was alleged to have committed assault. A 2-year suspension was recommended and implemented by this body. The facts to that matter was that Ryan, during an argument with his wife, grabbed her arm and pushed her. With that, he pled to disorderly conduct, and he did not respond to POST. Second matter where assault was at issue and a 2-year suspension as well was the June 11, 2014 matter of Rodney Hudson, where Rodney, a police officer and part-time ENT, slapped a patient's face. Now, these are different than Louis' matter. Louis was acting in self-defense. statutorily, every single one of us, as well as he, is entitled to that defense. Also, Louie, acting in the official capacity of a law enforcement officer, is able to use what reasonable force is necessary to effectuate an arrest. We feel he did that. Based upon those, we would ask that the body deviate downwards from the 2-year recommendation, finding that the prior reference to incidents are not similarly situated to that of Louie's. And I'm sorry, Mr. Yockey, I should have given you more time, or at least referenced those prior. Does the body have any questions?
What was the reasoning that the individual was unconscious on the ground? What did he respond for?
He indicated that he was under the, he had been using spice.
Any additional questions?
Was there charges filed against the 16-year-old?
Seeing no further questions, I'll call for the motion. I've got a motion from Mike Haddon.
I move that we accept the 2-year recommendation from POST.
Motion from Mike Haddon to accept the 2-year suspension as requested by POST. Do we have a second?
Second.
I have a second from Colonel Mike Rappage. Any further discussion? Seeing none, I'll call for the vote. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Opposed.
Show Sheriff Cameron Noel opposed. Thank you.
Okay, the next case is Jacob Main. Is Officer Main or Mr. Main or is it counsel present? I see no response. Mr. Main? Okay, no one is present for Mr. Main. Mr. Main is not present. The officer in this case, Jacob Main, had been a deputy with the Iron County Sheriff's Office for 4 years. He has since been terminated. He was terminated on September 18th, 2018. This is a Category B offense, a substantiated allegation of sexual conduct on duty. The baseline is 3 years of suspension. The range is 1.5 years to revocation, and POST is recommending 3 years. There are no mitigators, and the aggravators are that there were multiple people and incidents, and he was sexting while partially in uniform. On September 6th, 2018, Jacob Main was investigated by his department for an allegation of sexual conduct while on duty. During the department interview, Main admitted to having an affair with a court clerk and relationships with two other deputies from the department. Main admitted to kissing the female employees and grabbing their buttocks while on duty. Main said he engaged in kissing and a little grab-assing. Main admitted he would text female employees inappropriate conduct, which would be considered sexting. Main's department downloaded Main's personal cell phone and verified the sexually explicit text messages and photographs. Main's department located two photographs depicting Main while partially in uniform and exposing his genitals, which appeared to be taken at a correctional facility. During Garrity interviews with Post, Main said his trademark move is to grab the buttocks with both hands and pull the individual closer to him while he kisses the individual. Main admitted he grabbed one of the deputy's buttocks more than once while passionately kissing her at work. He was terminated from his department on September 18th, and he waived a hearing for an ALJ. Any questions? And the recommendation is 3-year suspension.
Do we have a motion?
Move to accept.
We have a motion from Bruce Bailey to accept POST recommendation. We have a second.
Second.
We have a second from Christy Morin. Any further discussion? Seeing none, we'll call for the vote. Those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you.
Okay. The next case is a dispatcher named Cameron Page. Is Cameron Page your counsel present? Okay, I see no response. Cameron Page was a dispatcher, currently unemployed. The substantiated allegation in this case was driving under the influence of alcohol, alcohol-restricted driver, open container in a vehicle on a highway, which is a Category D, which are Category D and F offenses. The baseline is a one-year suspension. The range is 3 months to 2.5 years, and Post is recommending 2.5 years. The aggravators in this case is an active warrant, multiple charges, previous Post investigation, and suspended driver's license at the time of the incident. Mr. Page failed to appear for his criminal hearing, and a warrant was issued for his arrest. He had 1.5 year service with his agency. On or about September 1st, 2018, Cameron Page was stopped for speeding. During the traffic stop, Page was arrested for driving under the influence of alcohol. During the investigation, it was determined Page was an alcohol-restricted driver with a suspended driver license. During a subsequent search, a partially consumed bottle of vodka was located in Page's vehicle. The investigating officer transported Page to the police department and asked Page to submit to a chemical blood test. Page was transported to the county jail and was booked for DUI. The blood test results were later determined to be 0.08 blood alcohol content. On September 24, 2018, Page failed to appear for a scheduled court hearing, and a warrant was issued for his arrest. He also did not participate in the Post investigation. We are recommending 2.5 years suspension. Any questions? Mm-hmm. What was the previous Post investigation? Do you know what the previous Post investigation?
Sheriff Pulser. Pulsberg.
I was wondering previously, wasn't it on that case as well that he failed to appear for the court hearings or anything else on that?
Another question. So, since this is a separate case, would it stack? Would it run concurrent?
Concurrent.
Consecutive?
Consecutive.
It would run consecutive.
Okay. It's in theory up to you guys. Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess we don't have a lot of these cases where
we haven't had
sentencing that goes on top of each other, so.
Are we allowed to go outside the matrix?
Don't think. But again, Post is limited to the guidelines. You guys
don't
are.
Can we jump back? That's what I'm wondering.
But counsel can deviate if they find aggravating, mitigating
Correct.
Factors.
Correct.
So I'd like
so
to
we
make
can
a
request
motion.
Revocation.
Sure. If the Post Council deems it necessary and you determine based on the officer and the conduct that's occurred here, that revocation is necessary, then should.
I'd like to make a motion for revocation.
Second.
We have a motion one for revocation. We have a second. I believe it was from Spencer Austin. Any further discussion? Seeing none, we'll call for the vote. Those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you.
Okay. The next case is Samuel Thomas. Samuel Thomas, are you present? Or is counsel for Samuel Thomas present? Okay, you've seen no response. Samuel Thomas was employed by the Utah Department of Corrections for 3 years. He was terminated by the Utah Department of Corrections on December 28, 2018, the substantiated allegation in this case was reckless endangerment, which is a Category A offense. The guidelines baseline is revocation. The range is 3 years to revocation, and Post is recommending revocation in this case. There are no aggravators and no mitigators. He pleaded guilty to reckless driving and unlawful motor vehicle use on March 4, 2019. These are Class B and Class C misdemeanors. On or about July 15, 2018, Samuel Thomas was seated in the passenger seat of a golf cart at a correctional facility where he was assigned to work when he and another officer witnessed an inmate walking between two buildings during a non-movement time. The inmate was approximately 50 feet away when the officers started driving toward the inmate. The other officer steered the golf cart toward the inmate in a joking manner while Thomas pressed on the accelerator. As the officers neared the inmate, Thomas let off the accelerator and the other officer applied the brakes, but was not able to come to a complete stop before striking the inmate with the golf cart. A criminal investigation determined the golf cart skidded for approximately 8 feet before colliding with the inmate. The investigation also found that Thomas's conduct was reckless, and charges were filed against him for reckless endangerment. On December 12, 2018, a reckless endangerment charge was dismissed. However, Thomas was charged with reckless driving, a Class B misdemeanor, and unlawful motor vehicle use on a public or private roadway, a Class C misdemeanor, in the local justice court. On February 25, 2019, Thomas entered a plea in abeyance to both charges. During the Garrity interviews with his agency and with Post, Thomas admitted to pressing on the accelerator in the golf cart during the incident. He also admitted his conduct was unprofessional and endangered the safety of an inmate. But he said he did not intentionally hit the inmate and said it was an accident. Thomas failed to respond to the notice of agency action in this case, and an order of default was signed by the ALJ and mailed to Thomas. Any questions?
Yes, Mr. Haddon.
I need to recuse myself from this case.
Show for the record, Director Haddon is recusing himself. We have any questions?
Post recommends revocation.
We have a motion from Sheriff Pulsifer to accept recommendation. We have a second.
Second.
We have a second from Spencer Austin. Do we have any further discussion?
I have a question, I'm sorry, that I need to ask Mr. Yockey.
Sure.
When a defendant or whatever, when they don't show up here, is it still appropriate to just go with the recommendation as a board member because they're not here and use that and just go off of what your counsel says, or should we still make a recommendation even though they're not here?
So I'm not. I'll do my best to address your question. So we're limited to the facts that are provided in the notice as that is. So he's entered an order of default, essentially waiving to this. He didn't provide a response. So in this regard, the facts are as stands. Now, whether or not you want to deviate from the recommendation of revocation, that's up to you. So there can be a discussion whether the council determines there's aggravating or mitigating circumstances to deviate from revocation or not. That is truly within.
Just want to make sure that we're making the decision on the facts, and that we're not just making the decision because the individual is not here. I don't know why they're not here. I wish he would have been here. I'd had many questions for him involving this case, but I am concerned that revocation is pretty severe. It's the most severe there is for that. However, he's not here to tell us the story on that.
So if you, by reading this notice of agency action, which contains the facts, if you see something that is mitigating, or in this case mitigating, because if you go aggravating, there is no revocation. If you determine there's something mitigating, then I would encourage you to discuss it amongst the board and go from there.
My question would be, why does the matrix call for revocation on this, which was a plea in abeyance? You had a DUI, which is a Class B, so only a 2-year.
This was a Category A.
Class A. This is a Class A offense as well.
It looks like he also lied under Derry.
So,
but that wasn't something that was noticed of and actually investigated as a count, right?
Right. But that includes it.
But it could be an aggravating.
Right. And that does call for revocation.
So, Chief Swanson, just in regards to your question, so. Again, the guidelines are based on Post. Post is going to always stay within the guidelines, and they'll do their best to determine whether or not there's aggravating or mitigating circumstances to within the range. So in this case, reckless endangerment has always been a Category A offense, and so that's why revocation is just the baseline. Post hasn't determined on their own whether or not there's mitigating circumstances, so that's up to you as the council members to determine.
So we currently have a motion and a second, and we were in discussion with Sheriff Noel. Any further discussion? Seeing none, I'll go ahead and call for the vote. Those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you.
We'll get it later. No. Okay, the next case is Zachary Woodhead. Zachary Woodhead or his counsel present? Okay, I see no response. Zachary Woodhead is currently unemployed. He was never an officer. The substantiated allegation was willfully falsifies information to obtain certification. This is a Category C offense. The baseline is 2 years suspension. The range is 9 months to 3.5 years, and POST is recommending 2 years. There are no mitigators and no aggravators. Mr. Woodhead, on February 7th, 2019, was investigated for falsely supplying information to obtain a POST certification. Woodhead documented on his POST application that he used marijuana twice, with the last date of use listed as August 2nd, 2012. While attending the academy, Woodhead filled out a pre-employment background packet for a local agency on November 5th, 2018. Woodhead disclosed his pre-employment disclosed on the pre-employment background packet that he used marijuana four times, with the last use date as May 2016. During a Garrity interview with Post, Woodhead admitted to using marijuana four times. Woodhead said the last date of marijuana use was May 2016. Woodhead admitted that he did not include on his Post application that he had smoked marijuana one additional time and transported a marijuana edible brownie out of state and then shared and ate the brownie with a friend. Woodhead said he did not recall the two most recent instances of marijuana use until he filled out his pre-employment background packet on July 5th, 2018. He graduated from the academy on December 6th, 2018. He waived his right to a hearing. And we are requesting a two-year suspension. He is not currently employed by a department.
We have a motion to accept from Chief Swanson. Do we have a second? Second from Colonel Rappage. Any further discussion? Seeing none, I'll call for the vote. Those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, thank you.
Morgan York? Morgan York present? I see no response. Any counsel present for Morgan York? No response. Morgan York is still employed by the Department of Corrections and has been employed for 10 years. The substantiated allegation is disorderly conduct. This is a Category F, as in Frank, offense. The baseline is 3 months. The range is a letter of caution to 1 year, and POST is recommending 3 months. Morgan York pled guilty to disorderly conduct, which is an infraction. There are no aggravators and no mitigators. On December 10th, 2018, Morgan York was moving her property out of the home she shared with her husband. York had taken most of the property out of the home, including a PlayStation. York was backing her vehicle out of the driveway when her husband got upset and took the PlayStation out of the vehicle. York stopped the vehicle and struggled with her husband for possession of the PlayStation. During the struggle, York and her husband fell to the ground, breaking the PlayStation and ripping the shirt her husband was wearing. York was cited for disorderly conduct. On December 12, 2018, the case was screened with the county attorney, and York was charged with disorderly conduct. On January 22, 2019, York entered a plea in abeyance to a charge of disorderly conduct, a violation of Utah Code 769102, which is an infraction. On March 13, 2019, during a post-Garrity interview, York admitted she struggled with her husband to gain possession of the PlayStation. York said her husband's shirt was torn and a piece of the PlayStation was broken during the struggle. York waived her right to a hearing before an administrative law judge, and POST is recommending 3 months suspension.
Mr. Haddon will recuse himself. Do we have a motion to accept? We have a motion to accept from Colonel Rappage. Do we have a second? Second from Chief Swanson. Any discussion? Seeing none, we'll call for the vote. Those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, we'll move forward. Thank you.
Okay, last case on the calendar, Philip. Sergeant Hamlin, how do you pronounce the last name? Zeisness. Is Mr. Zeisness present? Mr. Zeisness, are you represented by counsel? And did I pronounce your name correctly? How do you pronounce it? Zeisness? This is from your employer. Up with counsel. So the next case is Philip Zeisness. He has been with the Box Elder Sheriff's Office for 13 years. He's still employed there. There are no aggravators, no mitigators. The sustained allegation in this case, substantiated allegation rather, was criminal mischief, which is a Category E offense. Baseline is 6 months. Post is recommending 6 months, and the range is a letter of caution from to 1.5 years. I'm going to go through this, and then we'll get to that. How's that? The facts of this case are that on April 26, 2018, Officer Philip Zeisness legally entered the residence of his fiancée. While inside the residence, he accessed a tablet belonging to his fiancée and read electronic messages between her and another male. He became angry and destroyed the property valued under $500. He immediately felt remorse for what he had done and contacted dispatch to make them aware of what he had done. On December 12, 2018, during a post-Garrity interview, he admitted he became angry after reading text messages between his fiancée and another male and broke multiple items in his fiancée's residence by hitting them with a hammer. The fiancée declined to press charges, therefore no charges were filed. On May 10th, Zeisness failed to respond to notice of agency action and an order of default was entered. Mr. Zeisness has provided me with a letter, Mr. Yockey and Mr. Chairman, from the University of Utah National Center for Veterans Studies. And the question is, may I read this into the record?
So public, I've got to think about this one. I apologize. Whether or not I just address it with just the chairman.
It's signed by a research assistant professor in the Department of Psychology, Director of Clinical Services, National Center for Veteran Studies at the University of Utah.
So this will really be up to the council. Typically, we just accept those letters from employers. However, we'll give him deference and ask the council to discuss it and determine whether they want to move outside of what we traditionally do.
Can I ask, is council, in your review of this, is this something that we need to potentially consider closing session for based on the content that you're viewing?
Yes.
Make that motion.
So we have a motion from Victoria McFarland to close the session to discuss the letter. And we have a second from Spence Austin. Those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, we'll go ahead and we'll call this body into recess.
So I'm just going to leave the letter with
the letter provided by the National Center for Veterans. Reviewed the information based on the character of the individual or mental or physical health related to this matter and brings it back to the council.
Okay. So the post recommendation in this case is 6 months. I've already given you all the facts. Would you like me to do it again?
We
need to refresh your
follow-up recollection. Questions from post council.
Would you like to ask
Sheriff Curtis? Oh, wait. Go ahead.
The question I have is you had a letter of reprimand and mandatory anger management. Is the letter that was provided fulfilling that requirement from your agency?
No, that's a separate. So they had me go through anger management just for department-wise. And then I've gone through, if you count that anger management, I've gone through four different therapies at different places for PTSD. And this is the one that I was told at the end was a good one. And I was recommended and referred to this one. And so I did this one on my own.
Okay. So you've satisfied the requirements of your agency?
Yes.
Any further questions? Seeing none, we'll call for a motion.
Mr. Chairman, I would make a motion that we deviate from the recommendation and authorize a letter of caution.
I have a motion from Spencer Ostick to deviate from post recommendation.
Chief Swanson.
Second.
And we have a second, from Alan Swanson. Any further discussion? Seeing none, we'll call for the vote.
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Director Stevenson.
Thank you, Chair, Council. There are three items I would like to discuss with the Council. The first one is the changes to the basic correctional officer certification. Remember, last legislation, they changed or lowered the age from 21 to 19. We've been working closely with Salt Lake County. Again, this is just exclusively for the counties. Department of Corrections opted not to be a part of this pilot program. We're recommending, requiring that the defensive tactics portion in the SFO, if they are not going to sit through and audit the SFO course, they're going to be required to go through the defensive tactics portion. We feel that's very valuable, especially considering the setting in which they will be working in. They will take all the intermediary tests, but they will not be sitting in for the certification exam. So basically, they'll be coming to us. We will treat them just like a waiver applicant, where if they've gone through SFO, they have that completed. Then we would consider that as a condition for them to be able to waive. They'll take the certification exam, and if they are successful, they will receive their special functions certification. But when they finish this program, at the current moment, they will not have SFO, but they will have the basic corrections certification. I know Sheriff Pulsifer had some questions about how this process works, because Department of Corrections, their academy, is not teaching this. And maybe this is a discussion we have with Executive Director Haddon. But I know Salt Lake County is gearing up to start July 1 to deliver that training. So I'm sure one of the questions was, where do you get that training? I don't know. Executive Director, the only thing they're required to do is they have the option to audit the SFO piece, meaning sit in, attend the class, learn the objectives, but they can't sit in for the certification. How do you?
Yeah, I'm not sure if I can necessarily answer that. Maybe Travis can answer that. Not to put him on the spot after I'm on the spot a little bit, but we opted not to go down this pathway, at least for now, and so that's why it's being run as a pilot. So for us, we're still requiring them to be 21 years of age, and they'll go through a full SFO block and become SFO certified, and then go through the BCO block to become correctional officer certified. So for us, it's business as usual. For those that are going through this pilot, I don't really know exactly where they're going to get this additional training, or whether we've discussed our department or somebody else providing that training. But for us, we're just doing business as usual. Our academy will be for those that are 21 and older, and they will go through the SFO block and be SFO certified.
I'm not trying to put you on the spot, but I am. Would corrections object to continue to train the jailers, even though the age is 19, from the rural parts of Utah, because they won't be able to aggregate a big enough size to justify the training? Would that be something that you would entertain in your academy?
I haven't even thought about it.
Okay.
That would be something that we'd have to think about and talk about with the sheriffs as well as our training bureau.
Okay. How would you like me to proceed with that? Because I feel obligated to at least provide an avenue for which this can happen. So I either work with Salt Lake County to see if they have room, or with you, or both.
Do you know what Salt Lake County is planning on doing?
They're going to do exactly as I prescribed. They're going to have them sit in for through the entire SFO portion. Weber State is going to require them to go through the SFO portion as well. So I do not know of a program as of yet that is just going to allow them to sit through the BCO. So would you like me to work with Director Knorr and communicate that way to see if that's something you'd want to do?
We'd be happy to talk about it with the Sheriff's Association as well to see if they have any feedback on what their plans are.
Perfect.
That satisfies.
Okay. Any other questions about this?
Some questions.
So Gary from SLCC is here as well. I don't know if you want to provide me input on as far as your guys' direction.
We don't do it.
They don't do it.
We don't do BC.
You don't do the show. Okay. Just wanted to clarify.
We have SFO and LEO.
Sorry for putting you on the spot here.
I'm glad I could answer.
With no further questions, I want to discuss the guidelines. As a result of Auditor Dugrell's report and also our own research, we found some areas in which we can tighten up our sexual misconduct portion of the guidelines. One is sexting. We invent new terms for weird behavior. But anyway, in Idaho, sexting, they will investigate those cases if there is a nexus to them performing their job. So, for example, if they're sexting a CI, confidential informant, or they're sexting a victim of a case they're doing, or anything, any nexus to their duties, and they're exchanging inappropriate texts, then that is under purview of their post to investigate those violations. I've been working with our attorney, Linda Vitti, to come up with a definition, and I plan on having a sound definition this next meeting. There's also another area that we did not anticipate, and that is, and this is a harsh word, I'll just say pleasure, when somebody pleasures themselves out of sight, but they're on duty in their car, this will also be included in that definition. I hope there's no questions, but are there any questions?
Are you looking to have a separate category from sexual conduct on duty, or just defining it better?
Defining it better to make it more inclusive of this behavior. Good? I'm good. All right, moving on. Leadership training.
Just because I want to put you back on. Turn around is fair play. So in terms of sexting, does it matter, do we differentiate between whether it's a personal device or a issued device?
That is a good question. I don't know if Idaho differentiates between the two. I wouldn't think they would, because it is, these contacts are generated through their professional work.
With the CI.
Yeah, so I wouldn't imagine that we would distinguish between the two, but that is something we definitely need to discuss. So, and whether it include emojis, we have to decide whether we need to include a lot. There's a lot of stuff that you don't think about, you know?
Moving on.
Moving on. Thank you. Leadership training. I've invited Mike Gilletti and Gary Cox from the community college just to be here just in case you have some questions. But as you guys know, with in-service, we've really cut back on in-service because of budget purposes or reasons. And really, since I've been director of leadership training, has just been subpar. We've had classes we've called leadership training, but I really didn't think they met the need of our profession. So I was approached by UPOA and Salt Lake Community College to propose creating a leadership program or course. I know there's a lot out there, but it would be nice to have something that Utah has developed that we can deliver to you. There would be an expense because UPOA and the community college would be leading this and developing it. Post would offer their resources when needed, but for the most part, it would be warehoused in the community college area. And I'd envision an executive-level program for your officers to help meet that need. But Post, at the moment, we don't have anything. You guys are left to your own devices to find that training, wherever it may be. But I think there needs to be something in-state, in-house, where we can develop our future leaders. So I don't know if you have any questions of Director Cox or Mike. Like the idea, so it'd be a partnership, and we would be working with them very closely, and giving you updates, Chief.
About partnering with the Chiefs of Police Association, because they offer a class like that as well.
Right, is that fully developed? I can't remember.
It's been going for 2 years, so.
Okay, and maybe we can get those objectives, and we can build upon them, because I definitely don't want to create redundancy. But
it's an administrative level training for future chiefs, and it's really pretty open. I think depending on agency size, that could be anywhere from a sergeant to a lieutenant and up. Obviously, that's a recommendation from the chief law enforcement official there. It would be nice if we had something, obviously, that would cross-pollinate with the sheriffs and DPS and other entities, corrections. Because I think there is a void there. Would be nice. We just started about 3 years ago because there was an absence of that trying to train our future leaders.
Good. Other programs are pretty pricey. The LPO that Highway is doing, that's kind of a pricey program, but a very good program. I've read a lot of the content and material. But we want something that's cost-effective, but at the same time very valuable and effective for developing future leaders. I guess we're good to go. Director, you have something? Yeah, come on up, Mike.
We just envision this as being a credit-bearing course that we could do over the course of maybe two blocks, so 2 8-week blocks across 2 semesters, that would provide your people that you want to develop with some of those basic skills that they need for leadership and executive leadership, and something that would be, and we can't do it for free, like the director says. We've got to choose where we put our resources as well, and we want to be able to develop this, but we also want to be able to expect in putting out the cost to develop it, that we would have some response from the law enforcement community in the state to attend those classes, to enroll in those classes. And absolutely, we want to include chiefs and other administrators, either from the Chiefs of Police Association, I'm FBI National Academy Associates, Sheriff's Association, and others to help develop that. We're not just going to come at this from a scholastic perspective or an educational perspective, but the practitioner's perspective as well.
Mike, do you have anything to add?
Just that we're pleased and honored and looking forward to the possibility of partnering in this project. We think it's very important and very timely, and the Utah Peace Officers Association is committed to exactly that sort of professional development. So thank you.
Thanks, Mike. Okay, we'll proceed with that. And then just an update. Chief Carpenter sent a letter to the letter that was approved by council to Auditor Dougal. He's reached out to me, and I have a meeting scheduled with him June 27th at 1 o'clock. I anticipate that being a very good meeting. Just to share with him some of your observations and ours through our research, and just report to him what those findings are.
Would you like to set a meeting?
Next meeting. We usually do it in September. In the past, I have cried that I had no budget to go anywhere, but I have to be honest. This past legislative session was very good to post, so we could. You know, it's kind of like when you take away something, it's hard to get it back. When they start asking about where your money's going. Definitely not off the table, but something to. I'd be very uncomfortable going to the legislator and saying, hey, now we can give free food. I'll answer that. Probably not. Yeah. So we could piggyback on the Sheriff's Conference, which is typically the last week of September. Is that still the case?
15th to the 17th.
Okay, take that back. Second to the last week of September. Roundtable is usually the 18th. Going to be the 18th or 19th? Yeah.
The 19th? Is it the 19th, Sheriff?
Do we want to go to St. George?
I wish you would. Sheriff Pulsifer wishes you would.
Curtis, yeah.
We've done it in years past.
We have. Yeah. We have.
Kind of why we got you that money, Director, isn't it?
That's true. That's true.
I'm just looking on our webpage, pull it up. That's what it said on there. I may be wrong. We normally started on a Sunday, golf tournament, and then we got Monday, Tuesday, and then meeting Wednesday at his office.
Right.
So
it's Wednesday, isn't Tuesday?
The chiefs and the sheriffs meet on Wednesday. Tuesday is the night of the comp, or is the dinner.
Okay. St. George, is everybody in agreement?
Wednesday the 19th, or the 18th rather.
So we're looking at the afternoon?
Yeah.
Yeah, about 1300 started.
Okay.
I will find you a location.
Location, thank you, Sharon Pulsifer. That was my next question.
18th? I think so.
So September 18th at 1300, and location to be determined.
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you for your time. We are now adjourned. I like doing that.